and all the gang on 2FM Drive. It is Thursday, the 17th of April. I'm Andrew O'Connor and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show with Beto Da Silva at 7 o'clock, Bernard Jackman joins us on a very busy week of rugby news to talk Sexton's return to the Lions, Leinster's next top All Black, Connacht's head coach hunt, and we'll preview the URC and the Women's Six Nations. In soccer, Paul Curry is in studio to discuss Virgil van Dijk's deal, plus Champions League, English Premier League, Europa League, and the latest from the Women's Premier Division. In Camogie, Cork legend Aoife Murray sets us up for the championship throw-in, while the Eye in America, Jeff Shepherd, has his sneaky little eye on a McIlroy win with the US Masters. And what a way to start the week in America. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, very welcome to Paul Curry in studio with me. Paul, happy Holy Thursday to you.
Happy Holy Thursday, Andrew, to you too.
Yes, it's a good day, and a good day for Liverpool fans with the news that Liverpool skipper Virgil van Dijk has extended his contract with the Dutch centre-back, signing to remain at Anfield until 2027. It's big news for the Reds, and it just shows you how the stability of a football club. There's a lot to be said for it.
Yeah, there is, and I'm sure Liverpool fans are delighted to... with the bit of business that's been done over the last couple of weeks and the announcements over the last 7 days with Salah and now Van Dijk. It's hard to believe that Van Dijk has been there 7.5 years, Andrew. When I heard that, I thought, my God, that's it's quite a stint, and he's going to be there for another while longer. And I think it's really important, particularly losing Trent, that they kept the other two. And you can see the form that he brings to that back four when he's playing. He seems to make everybody else better around him. He looks so comfortable on the ball. Still doesn't look like he's slowing down just yet. And even if he was to slow down over the next year and a half, 2 years, his reading of the game is so strong that he probably prevents those situations or prevents those sprints with pacey centre forwards, and he just looks like a Rolls Royce. So it's a massive bit of business for Liverpool to do. And I think what's also probably, you know, another sort of piece of this deal is his leadership and the leadership that he brings to that Liverpool squad. If you're Arne Slot and you're looking to bring in players in the summer, I think you want them to go into a dressing room where there's players who are setting standards. And for me, that is Mo Salah, it's Virgil van Dijk, it's Alisson. Keeping those key components of the dressing room in there is so important for what it is that they will want to strive to achieve next year and build on what will ultimately be a Premier League winning side and Premier League winning dressing room. You do not want to lose the key members from that team, and Virgil van Dijk is certainly one of the most important pieces in that jigsaw.
He cost £75 million back in 2017. That was a good bit of business. A lot of people thought it was a lot of money, and it was a lot of money, and it is a lot of money, but well spent.
Yeah, it is, and if you rewind back to that period of time, Liverpool were going very strong under Brendan Rodgers and then ultimately into Jurgen Klopp's era. And really what was missing from the side of that period of time was a really robust centre-half and a really robust goalkeeper. And they went out and they signed Virgil van Dijk.
That was the same summer, wasn't it?
It was. The two of them. Well, my recollection, Van Dijk went at Christmas and then maybe Alisson at the tail end of the year. I can't really remember. I could be wrong on that. But for both of those players to come into the building, it just gave them extra levels. And unfortunately for Liverpool, and during that period of time, they were just going up against such a strong Man City team that they didn't win maybe as many trophies as they could have, but they've certainly done well. Be two Premier League titles, Champions League, won the Carabao Cup a couple of times. Very, very decorated dressing room. And he has been so fundamental too, that as have Alisson, as have Salah, and you think back down through the years, the spine of the team has always been really strong. And actually, when Van Dijk got injured, I was a little bit worried. Remember when he did his ACL with Jordan Pickford in the Merseyside Derby when he came out? I wondered, would he come back the same player? And he looks every bit as good as he did before that injury. And he's a player who's just gone from strength to strength. He never really looks like he's out of breath. Never looks as if he's struggling with centre-forwards, other than Beto about 10 days ago. But anytime he's gone up against the best, whether that be Mbappe and co, he's always looked very comfortable. And it's a huge bit of business for Liverpool to do. And if you're trying to draw players into Liverpool in the summer, keeping two of the best players is certainly important for that. So Arne Slot would be absolutely delighted.
And they've been very quiet on the transfer front. So, and you imagine they were quiet with these two deals in the back of their mind. But it sets them up for a very interesting transfer window in the summer, because they have all of that core of their brilliant squad remaining, apart from Trent, obviously. But they should have funds then to bring more in.
Yeah, they need to sign a couple of bodies, would be my opinion. I think, naturally enough, you're going to have to replace Trent. I think it's too big a gap for Conor Bradley to come in and fill. Andy Robertson at left back has slowed down quite a bit. There's been a number of occasions this year when I've been a little bit worried from him in 1v1 situations, and you can see that there's a bit of worry in him in defensive situations, that players with pace can cause him a lot of problems. I think they can add another one in the middle of the park if they could afford to, and I would imagine that Darwin Núñez will likely exit the building in the summer. It just hasn't worked out for him. He doesn't seem to be a player that Arne Slot seems to put a lot of confidence in, or a lot of...
Looks like a Man United player.
Well, he could well be. I imagine he'll go to somewhere in Europe. But if he goes out of the building, that could free up funds to maybe bring a centre forward in as well. But you're right, Andrew. Like, they've always been quietly going about their business. They're not a team who kind of identifies a player, ends up in the media. It tends to be very under the radar. It tends to be players that is almost data driven when they're bringing players in, that fits into a system. So don't be surprised if there's a couple of players, maybe not top notch names, but certainly you would expect that there'd be additions to that squad to try bolster them to go for another Premier League and ultimately go for a Champions League next year.
Paul, please stay with us, because we've got lots of soccer to talk about. Last night's Champions League, tonight's Europa League, the English Premier League and lots more. So Paul will stay with us as we turn our attention now to rugby. Delighted to say that Bernard Jackman is on the line. Bernard, a happy Holy Thursday to you.
Hi, Andrew. Yeah, a lot of rugby to talk about this week too.
There's a lot of stories. Let's start, I suppose. Let's get straight into it. Johnny Sexton set to move into full-time coaching with Ireland, and the former Roud Ave has also been confirmed as a member of Andy Farrell's backroom team on the British and Irish Lions. I presume that's good for the Lions, and it's also good for Ireland, and it's good for Johnny Sexton.
Yeah, look, it's brilliant. I think he tested the waters a little bit, the Six Nations. Just doing some work with the out halves, doing some work at training camp when his job allowed, but obviously felt it was something he wanted to pursue. There's no doubt that in my career he's the greatest rugby mind that I experienced, either as a coach or a player, which is very unusual from a player to be so sharp tactically and technically, and very much for Joe Smith, Stuart Lancaster, and Andy Farrell, he was able to adapt on the fly on the field, or else implement their plan to perfection. So it would have been a shame to lose all that international property that he has. Obviously, his brother is doing great in Connacht, and now he's going to Ulster this summer. And to get to go on the British and Irish Lions tour as a coach would be unbelievable for. I suppose it's an unbelievable honour, but also it'd be brilliant for his development as a coach as well, getting access to all that. All the different players from different countries, the other coaches, etc. Even though obviously it's very Irish dominated, but likes of Richard Wigglesworth, etc. Test himself against Joe Schmidt. It's and then coming back to Ireland. I don't see any downside to it.
And yeah, it is good news for Ireland, because he's gonna start permanently on the Irish camp from when he comes back from the Lions, so that level of consistency should be good for that Irish camp as well. And you're not surprised anyway that he's ended up in coaching by
to be honest, I was more of a surprise that he would get away from it. I mean, he's so passionate about the game. Like, I know he still watches 6 or 7 games at a weekend. He'd be pausing them on Sky Plus, rewinding, working out why a defence was broken down or why attack didn't work. He just had too much passion and too much knowledge to stay away from it. I know he was doing very well in his corporate job as well, but the draw to be part of this Irish squad, to maybe win a World Cup as a coach, obviously was a huge driver of his as a player, to go to Australia with the British and Irish Lions and maybe win a series. I mean, they are things that when the opportunity comes along, if you don't grasp them, they won't be there, in the future. And I think I imagine he certainly realises that, and he's following his passion, and he'll give it 100% like he did as a player.
Now let's stick with a Johnny Sexton related story, I suppose, Bernard, because yesterday it was announced, and I think it was a surprise to many people, that All Black centre Rico Ioane has confirmed that he will join Leinster next season from the Super Rugby outfit, the Blues. And I mean, it was a surprise to everyone. Obviously, we've all seen the effect of Jordy Barrett and indeed RG Snyman in the Leinster squad. So I'm sure he'll be a great addition. But the surprise was the fact that he was the man who had those famous words with Johnny Sexton after New Zealand beat Ireland in that quarter final of the World Cup, and basically said to enjoy retirement and not miss your flight home. Are you surprised to see him coming to Leinster?
Look, it was a surprise, not because of the comments and the tension that obviously was there on the pitch in Paris, but really just Leinster. They do their business in such a quiet manner. I mean, you know, when Jordy Barrett was announced, that wasn't... Like, there's not many things that happen, Andrew, that you don't hear about or are about to happen that you don't hear about, you know, in the inner circle as such. Whereas this deal just came out of the blue. Rico Ioane put it up on his Instagram story. We weren't expecting news from Leinster this week, particularly because of the fact that the RFU have changed around the central funding model. And a lot of other provinces were kind of celebrating that. And then, you know, for Leinster to be able to announce this, and whether they timed it this week or not, it's a serious statement. I mean, you're losing Jordy Barrett, who's been phenomenal. They knew they were going to lose him because it was a sabbatical deal. But then you replace him with, you know, a world-class player. And the thing is, Andrew, like these type of players, the Jordy Barretts, the Rike Iones, they're not coming to Europe, but you know, the odd one is going to France. There's not many of them around the world, full stop. But for Leinster to be able to go back to back on a deal like this, is a real statement of intent from them. It's a sign of how, I suppose, attractive Dublin and playing for Leinster is. The NZRU, who these players are contracted to, obviously trust that because of what's happened with Barrett, that the player will be well looked after. That it'll help that Barrett, first of all, and now Ioane come back and be a big part of their World Cup bid in Australia in 2027. So it's a serious signing on the field. Different player completely, but another world-class player. Someone who can have big moments against the best opposition. And that's what I think is really important from your non-Irish qualified players. And obviously at the moment, Leinster are leading the way. Part of that's around the finance, some of it's around to location, some of it's around to the job they do in their recruitment. But certainly if you were, you know, a Connacht, Munster, Ulster coach or fan or player, I think you'd be pretty envious.
Okay, and just to ask you sort of a side question, is it because of the very strict, it's a sort of a comprehensive game management of the players in Ireland amongst the four provinces. Does that give unions like the New Zealand Rugby Union a lot of confidence in sending their players? Because they know we're not going to flog their players when they get over here.
Yeah, particularly when it's Leinster, because there's so many Irish internationals. And obviously you could argue back that those internationals' game time is managed more, hence there could be a reliance on the foreign player to play more. I think it's actually the opposite. They know that Leinster have so many different star quality players that when some of those players are off, there's enough there to play without having to risk a Jordy Barrett at 80% or to overplay them. So that's another advantage for Leinster, is that I think when the Auckland Blues or the New Zealand Rugby Union look at Leinster, they say, look, they have so much quality and strength and depth that they're never really going to have to overplay him. Whereas they may fear, looking at some of the other provinces, the coach is going to be under pressure to try and get every possible minute out of our asset. And that's something that, look, the only need, like, I think the beauty of what's happened with Jordy Barrett is they've proven to obviously the NZRU that they are a safe bet. And likewise for one of the other provinces, they just need to get one over the line. And then obviously, I don't think this is easy for them, because financially they're not as strong and all that's relevant. But I would say that the four provinces are well capable of looking after a player really well, but the challenge is to get one.
You brought it up just a couple of minutes ago. Obviously, the IRFU have announced that they've tweaked the central contract. So in future, there's going to be 40% of the central contract picked up, 30% of the contract picked up by the 40% picked up by the provinces, and that extra money is going to go in to player pathway development in Ulster, Connacht, and Munster, not Leinster. Do you see that as a positive tweak to the Irish setup?
Yeah, look, I think Leinster can afford it. You know what I mean? They can afford. They're able to move a game to Croke Park. Obviously, they're playing a lot of games in Aviva. They're getting the top two seeds of Europe, so they're getting, you know, a more significant level of the gate in the quarterfinal and semifinal, etc. So I think they can find a way to still stay competitive. The others are struggling. The other pathways are struggling. The unfortunate thing is that, you know, money going into a pathway now, it might take 3 or 4 years before we see any benefits. Now it has to happen now. But I would also think that's important that it's happening. But also I think, you know, the provinces should be helped with some additional investment into some foreign player signings to be able to give them that stardust that can, you know, help them get back into European, into semi-finals. And realistically, this year has been a very disappointing year for Irish rugby in a European level, with Connacht being, you know, missing out an opportunity to make a Challenge Cup semi-final, Munster the same, and Ulster not making a quarter-final. So I think that's an area that also needs investment.
But you think generally that it is, in terms of one part of a sort of a package or a suite of measures to rebalance the provinces, it is a positive outcome?
I admire the fact that they're trying to find resources for the other provinces, for sure.
OK, let's get on to Pete Wilkins. He resigned officially from his position as head coach of Connacht with immediate effect yesterday. Scrum coach Cully Tucker is placed in charge until the end of the season. Wilkins hadn't been with the team for the last four games. He had been on sick leave, according to the province. And I suppose they made it official yesterday and he is gone. What's your reaction, Bernard?
Yeah, look, I think it was coming. It was just when it was going to be announced. I think from Pete Wilkins' point of view, you know, the team haven't got significantly better without him, and I think the players now need to start taking responsibility. They blew an unbelievable opportunity to do something special in the Challenge Cup. You know, there were 20 odd points up against Racing, and Racing had a man sent off, and they didn't get it done. And missed an opportunity to move a game to Pearse Stadium, which, you know, I was looking up to be in McHale Park a few weeks ago, and there were so many new Connacht fans there who hadn't ever been to a Connacht game, and it's so hard to entice them in. And unfortunately, or fortunately, moving a game to a new stadium, which was obviously on the cards for this, is away, and they've missed that opportunity along with potentially getting to a final in Cardiff and maybe silverware. So they're now looking at a really difficult end of season. You know, it could peter out very quickly. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. They're down in South Africa without some key players, and now the challenge for Connacht is to put a management system in place. I know they're bringing in a general manager or head of performance, Billy Millard. I think they have their head coach already signed, Rob Seeb, looks like, from Australia, or certainly he's going to have a senior role. And then obviously Cully Tucker is staying, John Muldoon is staying, and what the rest of it looks like is still up for debate or unclear. They've cut their budget and got rid of a lot of very good players over the last couple of years. And unfortunately, when you lose that amount of experience, it's very difficult to succeed in competitions as competitive as Bryn.
Obviously, the Castle Bar game was a huge success, and there were people were remarking that there was a huge amount of local Mayo people there who may not have gone to the sports ground before. Do you expect Connacht to continue that sort of that idea next year, and as you say, just go around the grounds in all the province and get all those extra bums on seats?
I think it's unlikely. I think once this stadium is they're doing a great job developing sports ground and or the Dexcom stadium, and I think once that's built, it'd be very hard for them to move unless it's compulsory for a Champions Cup or a Challenge Cup semi-final. So I think this was the year to do it. McHale Park was a big success, but in general, I think they'll want to sweat the assets that they're investing so much money in Galway.
Yeah, it makes sense. And now let us get on to this weekend's games. Obviously, Connacht are over on their South African tour and they've got a tough opener against the DHL Stormers.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm delighted to see Jack Carty back in the squad. I think he's been harshly treated in terms of selection, has played very little this year. I'm not sure what his situation is next year with contract. I think he could be off. But he's been an unbelievable stalwart. Obviously, Connacht captain, local, homegrown player, and probably just what you need when you've got a young squad, you know, with facing the adversity that they're facing. Obviously, the head coach is now gone. As I said, there's a lack of clarity on what's happening next year. So hopefully he can galvanise this squad and finish his kind of career on a high, if that's to be the end of it. He's been an unbelievable stalwart. But speaking to a few friends who coach the Stormers, and they've got the likes of Damien Willemse, Warwick Gallant back from injury. They have a very soft draw for the end of season. And they think that they, with the gap in the Champions Cup, they've had a week to, or 2 weeks now to get a few things sorted out, and they think they can go on a late charge. And they are very talented. There's no competition. There's no question that they have more talent than Connacht can this weekend with the injury they have. So this could be a very difficult challenge for them.
And Munster have to put the disappointment of last weekend behind them as they welcome the Vodacom Bulls to Thomond Park on Saturday at 5:15.
Yeah, this is a game Munster are more than good enough to win. The Bulls are very up and down side. Were poor against Edinburgh last week. But the big challenge for Munster is, what has Europe taken out of them? You know what I mean? They went to the emotional well in La Rochelle. You know, they put a huge effort in Bordeaux, but it was a game too far for them. And are they able to recover in 7 days to be able to put their best performance forward? That's a huge challenge for the coaching staff. And they have a bit more positivity in terms of injuries. Players come back from injury, which will help. But yeah, Munster, they live for Europe, and obviously that journey is now over. They just got to get back quickly this weekend. And if they do, even get to 90%, they're good enough to beat the Bulls.
Now, Lansdowne Road on Saturday at 7:35. Leinster welcome Ulster. And Bernard, Ulster turned Leinster over twice last year. And I know Leinster are in sparkling form at the moment, but they'll be determined not to let Ulster get the upper hand again.
Yeah, it's very hard to see. I think last year was neither team were Leinster's first choice team. And it won't be first choice this week, but that second and third choice team did such a good job in South Africa, losing the last minute to the Bulls and then beating the Sharks. No matter who they put out, they are all on the same page. The feel-good factor of two amazing performances in Europe, it's at home. Ulster are still a bit hit and miss, I think. And I'd be shocked if Leinster don't get a win here.
Okay. Before I let you go, Ireland, the women's team, dealt a major blow today ahead of the Women's Rugby World Cup later this year. Erin King will miss the tournament due to a serious knee injury, and she was a young player really performing well in the squad, Bernard.
Oh, she's had some impact the last season, and is a huge blow. I mean, to get knocked out now, you know, an injury that's going to rule you out of the World Cup, I know it's this summer, but you still, you know, it shows you how serious this injury is. And Ireland are going the right way. I thought the first half against England was a serious statement, and I think they're more than good enough to beat Wales. But obviously the task is harder now with Aaron out.
Yeah, Wales, of course, Ireland visit Wales on Sunday, 3 o'clock. Ireland should have enough to get over the Welsh hurdle.
Yeah, big time. No, Ireland are chasing down France as the second best team in this competition, and what we've seen so far are better than Scotland, Italy and Wales.
Do you think we're far away? Obviously, they showed against England, especially in that first half, that they could do it. But, you know, against France, do you think we're edging closer?
You know, France, I think we showed glimpses against France in round one. I would think if we had played with France at the end, I think it would be a lot closer. I think this team are definitely developing. There's a nice balance to the team. Could do a little bit more depth off the bench or more impact off the bench, but we're building really nicely for this World Cup.
Bernard, thanks for joining us on Game On. Great to speak to you as always, and we shall talk to you very soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
We'll be talking football after this break.
Game On. Association football.
Sounds so much more official now. Right, let's talk. We already spoke about Virgil van Dijk and his new contract with Liverpool. Today, FAI Grassroots Director Ger McDermott says the association remains keen to speak to the local leagues and associations around the country that harbour major concerns about the plans for Irish soccer to move to an aligned calendar by 2028. So basically, our professional leagues is summer football, but most of our amateur league and our schoolboy leagues are still playing through the winter football calendar. And we're one of the only UEFA football nations to, or I think we are the only UEFA nation that hasn't aligned its professional and amateur calendars.
You sound surprised, Andrew.
we're a very unique footballing nation, that's for sure. Do you think it's a good idea? Not the talking, consulting with clubs, which is obviously a good idea, but the whole realignment and moving to summer football.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have the facilities, and you speak to parents or coaches involved in schoolboy football. When it goes through the winter, there's just so many games called off, and kids aren't getting enough minutes. Competitive games or non-competitive games, they're just not getting enough contact hours with the football, and we have to try maximise that to the best as we can. I think the argument has been is that people go away during the summer months and they're not around, and that could impact participation levels, but realistically people go away for 10 days, 2 weeks at maximum at any given point during the summer. And if you're playing in better conditions, the grass tends to be a little bit better at this time of year as well. I think you improve the opportunity for kids to play more football. So I'm all for it. You know, the whole debate and the fact that there's people pulling in opposite directions will give you an understanding as to why we have maybe been left behind. You know, this is a small subset of what is going on at the top end of the game. You've got people who have completely different opinions on how football should be played, how it should be coached, what direction we should be going in. You would just hope that people would see common sense further down the line, and we would get to a situation where everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet. So I'd like to see it happen. I think the FAI should be pretty adamant with this and push it through and ensure that people come along the way, and the people who maybe pull against you will maybe in time see the reasoning for it. But it's something, Andrew, that has to be done.
I was looking at the voting numbers in the General Assembly in December when this went to a vote, and it got through by a margin of 74 votes to 56. Mm. So not a whitewash by any stretch of the imagination. So there obviously is a huge amount of, not opposition, maybe that's too strong a word, but a lot of people have concerns about the change.
Yeah, they do. And there's probably competing sports that really kick in the summer months that, you know, if football continues as winter football as it is today, maybe the kids are able to balance playing more than one. And that would, in my opinion, be the reason why maybe people are voting against it. I think the common sense here is to stick with summer football. You speak to, even speaking to Marie Crowe, her young lads involved in Shamrock Rovers, and she'd be telling you another game is called off and another game is called off, and you could go weeks without having a competitive game of football. That's just not good for anybody. It really isn't. Yes, training is very important. The contact hours are very important with the ball, but ultimately you need to be learning within a game scenario. You have to be able to learn in those situations. That's where a lot of the education is done, and that's where you take the learnings from training into match day situations. So we got to find ways. We have to improve the facilities as well, but aligning the calendars would certainly be helpful within that journey.
Before we touch on the Champions League last night and the Europa League tonight, the English Premier League had one game last night, but it was a interesting game because Newcastle, without of course Eddie Howe, who is still recovering from pneumonia, had another massive 5-0 victory over Crystal Palace, and it eases themselves into third place in the Premier League. Massive
huge
performances,
yeah,
for Newcastle.
Huge. It puts them in a really strong position now, Andrew, for Champions League football, and they are the informed team. A lot of the other sides are dropping points and terribly inconsistent at different points throughout this running, but Newcastle are much the opposite. Ever since they won that Carabao Cup, they've really kicked on, and they've won 19 of their last 24 games.
And they're only four points behind Arsenal now.
Yeah.
Could they get second place?
I think they could, given Arsenal's distractions with the Champions League. Like, Arsenal are very comfortable to reach a Champions League position for next year, so all eyes will be on keeping the squad fit and just keeping people ticking over. Newcastle are like a steam train at the moment. They're scoring a huge amount of goals. They look brilliant at the back. Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall have done incredible work there, to kind of get Newcastle back to where they were 2 years ago when they were going so strong for European football. You're worried now, and I said this a couple of weeks back, I think it was on Saturday Sport, Nottingham Forest are getting dragged into a bit more of a battle for that fourth and fifth position that maybe it was seeming a couple of weeks ago. They are now 2 points behind Newcastle. They're only 2 points ahead of Man City and 3 points ahead of Chelsea and Aston Villa. So there's a huge race to go there. Obviously, the title is sewn up. You've got the relegation battle pretty much the same. Champions League football is where the eyes are going to be. Newcastle looking great form. I would expect Man City will get there, and I think Chelsea or Aston Villa will pip Nottingham Forest.
Apart from Liverpool, who we all think and have no are going to win the league this season, the from second to seven, the margins are so tight. It's going to make for a very, very interesting end of season, isn't it?
Yeah, it will. It will. And it has such a big part to play, Andrew, for the teams that are looking to spend in the summer, because we all know about the money that is involved in the Champions League. If you're in the Champions League, you're able to attract the best players across Europe into your club. Look at Aston Villa and the journey they've gone on under Unai Emery. If you were looking at that club and seeing the game they had against Paris Saint-Germain the other night and the strengths that they've grown to under Unai Emery, you'd say that's a club that's going places, and qualifying consistently for the Champions League helps you to bring in bigger players. And if you, let's say, for instance, if you're Marcus Rashford, you probably
he mentioned Rashford after the game, and he said if we don't qualify for the Champions League, which they would now have to qualify through the league, the chances of them signing Rashford permanently for 40 million are remote.
Yeah, and you can understand why. Now, a lot of Manchester United fans probably be tearing their hair out and saying Marcus Rashford doesn't deserve to play in the Champions League the way he's performed for the last 12, 18 months. But being able to attract that type of player, Marco Asensio, who's with them at the moment, they want to be playing in these big nights. And particularly then when you look at Chelsea for profit and sustainability rules, you need to be qualifying for the Champions League consistently in order to get to max out the revenue that you can bring into the club. So there's a huge amount to play for in that sense. The likes of Chelsea, Aston Villa, Man City, they've all dropped points at different stages when they've been going for this Champions League spaces. So don't be surprised if there's going to be a hiccup or two or a hurdle or two that clubs are going to need to get over the next coming of weeks.
And there's a big hurdle for Aston Villa on Saturday, because they're welcoming Newcastle to Villa Park, which is going to be, as you just mentioned, they're almost unbeatable at the moment.
Yeah, very difficult game. They play Newcastle and then they follow that up with another league fixture against Man City. So these are the type of games, particularly when they're playing against each other, where you could see the equation, I guess, as being decided. But for Villa, off the back of what must have been an energy zapping night against Paris Saint-Germain, if you're Unai Emery, you have to try pick players up, you have to galvanise the team, and you have to try push on for not only the Champions League places, but they're also involved still in the FA Cup, and they've got a semi-final against Crystal Palace. So there's loads for them to play for, but the disappointment will naturally linger within that squad, given how close they got to bring in Paris Saint-Germain, at least to extra time. So no bigger fixture to try pick yourself up for than the in-form Newcastle.
Have you been impressed with Rashford briefly since he's joined Villa?
Yes and no. I mean, he still hasn't
scored. The other night.
Yeah, and that was impressive. He still hasn't scored a huge amount of goals. I think if he was hitting those numbers at Manchester United, people would probably be still questioning him. I think he can do more in that sense. And maybe if you're looking at Ollie Watkins or Marcus Rashford playing through the middle, I think Ollie Watkins gets you more goals. Marcus Rashford is maybe a little more threat when he drifts into wide areas. But he has a lot to do. You can see, though, being surrounded by better players who are feeling more confident, a team that's a little bit more progressive than Manchester United at the moment, it feels like an easier environment for him to play in. But there's certainly a lot more for Marcus Rashford to do in order to get back to those levels. If I think post-World Cup in Qatar, when he was just non-stop scoring goals, he looks such a threat when he's going at players, he's still a bit off that, if you ask me, Andrew.
Okay, let's go to last night's action. And Inter got by Bayern Munich, a 2-2 draw on the night. Inter won 4-3 on aggregate. Kane and Dyer both on the score sheet for Bayern Munich. But I mean, Munich had loads of chances last night, and probably over the two legs, but Inter were just probably a little more consistent.
Yeah, they would have been. And I think for Barcelona fans who were watching that last night, I'd say they would have been praying that Bayern Munich went through, because Inter Milan have that doggedness about them that Barcelona will come out all attack. The players that they have in that squad are far more suited to being on the front foot, and Inter Milan are so comfortable at sitting in. We've seen that down through the years. We saw it in the qualifying campaign. We saw it when they played Man City in the Champions League final. They ran them very close. They are very comfortable, typical Italian style under Inzaghi, sitting in, being hard to play against. And they've got threats at the top end of the pitch in Martinez and Thuram that can certainly cause teams problems. So I wasn't too surprised, to be honest with you, Andrew. I think Bayern Munich are missing a huge number of players that have probably hampered them at this stage of the competition. You can't really afford to be without the likes of Upamecano, Musiala, Manuel Neuer. They just don't have the strength and depth to bring players in. Like, Eric Dier is a good player. Is he Champions League winning material? I'm not so sure. And even Thomas Muller, who's aging at this period of his career, he's not going to be given a new contract. Him coming in from Musiala, there's just too much of a drop off. So I'm not surprised to see Inter go through. I think they're going to be a difficult side for Barcelona to face, and one that has an awful lot of experience as well of being at this stage of the competition. And don't be surprised if they were to squeak through in that semi-final.
Okay, so Arsenal, let's talk about them. They have PSG in the semi-final, which will be a mouth-watering tie. But let's look at last night. I mean, Arsenal were great. They did everything they had to do, and they just stopped Real Madrid. There was absolutely no penetration from the first minute to the last minute, other than that one mistake by Saliba.
Yeah, so starting with Arsenal, I thought they were brilliant on the night. I think you can really see the difference that Saka brings to that squad, and he was such a big loss for the run-in. They dropped a number of points while he was out injured. He just gives them so much going forward, and I actually thought Martinelli was the same last night. There's great energy, there's great creativity, and when you're contributing goals as well, that also helps. So they were fantastic. Declan Rice was brilliant in the middle of the park. Saliba, outside of the mistake, I thought looked very comfortable when going up against Mbappe and co. They looked like a really well-drilled unit. Now, I wouldn't, and I don't want to read too much into it, because I thought Real Madrid were pretty poor, particularly last night. You know, you're chasing a game. There was a lot of talk in the pre-match build-up that we were going to see, and we were expecting to see one of these trademark Real Madrid comebacks, whether or not they were going to be able to pull three goals back.
Remontada.
Yeah,
we thought can all forget that word now again.
We thought they'd get close, but I couldn't get over how direct they were. There seemed to be such a disconnect between the back four and the players who wanted to get forward. They were crossing balls in, which is very unlike Real Madrid, particularly when you haven't got a huge presence at the top end who's going to win headers against two centre halves. They lumped it long. They played for second balls. They got absolutely nowhere, Andrew. And you could really see the absence of a Toni Kroos-like midfielder, or even a Martin Odegaard, who was at Real Madrid.
Such a lack of pace to them going forward.
There was a real lack of pace. Yeah. There was a lack of penetration. There was a lack of creativity. And I accept that they're without three of their regular back four in Carvajal, Militao and Mendy, and that maybe would have given them something more, particularly going forward if you think of overlaps and linking the play. But they looked a little bit average last night. And to be honest with you, it doesn't surprise me when you read rumours circling around today that Ancelotti will leave at the end of the season. You could probably see that it needs freshening up. He's done a fantastic job, but maybe it needs somebody new to come in and bring a couple of players in with them to freshen that Real Madrid squad, because last night they looked very disconnected, Andrew. They looked very stale, and they didn't create a huge amount of problems for Arsenal.
I heard Klopp's name been mentioned in terms of Real Madrid, but you think Xabi Alonso would probably be a better bet?
Not necessarily a better bet. I just see it being more realistic to happening. I'm not sure Jurgen Klopp is going to jump back into club management. It seemed like the last number of years at Liverpool took its toll on him, and I'm not sure he'll be too eager to jump back in.
He would be probably eager to jump back and have that squad anyway, would he?
Well,
it's not really his sort of players.
Well, Vinicius Jr., Mbappe, Rodrigo, Bellingham, they're still, and you've got Trent going in there, there's still a lot of
talent
there.
There's a good spine.
And yeah, Real Madrid is a job that maybe doesn't come up too often.
But are you going to get them all to defend? Are you going to get them all to be monsters of mentality for 90 minutes all over the field?
They probably don't have to defend too much in La Liga, as you would do in the Premier League. But yeah, would the styles match up? I'm not too sure. He's obviously taken that job with the Red Bull side of kind of orchestrating things from a football perspective. Maybe that's enough to keep him ticking over for the next while. I just think Xavi Alonso is maybe a candidate that you could see taking the job more so than a Klopp. He's obviously played for the club. He's done great work at Bayern Leverkusen. The style would probably match up. He was rumoured with the job last year. Leverkusen haven't really kicked on to the levels that maybe we would have expected this season. He looks like somebody who would be a good fit there. But whoever takes it, it comes with a huge amount of pressure, comes out with a huge amount of expectation. And you do need a certain level of experience to navigate that ship.
Too right. Let's go on to tonight then. Europa League quarterfinals, second legs. Man United 2, Lyon 2. You just don't know what you're going to get, do you?
No. Yeah, and you don't want to hang your hat in Manchester United either. You don't want to sit here and back them to go through, because they've shown so many times that they're capable of conceding sloppy goals or throwing, you know, leading positions away. And that was very evident. Like, they should be coming into this game, Andrew, leading. Like, yeah. It was criminal, the goals that they gave away and the mistakes that they made in the fixture last week.
Would you have De Gea in over Onana any day?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think most Man U fans would. I'd be surprised if he didn't put him in. I know he took him out at the weekend, but you would expect Onana would start tonight. But for Manchester United, when I've watched them, particularly at Old Trafford, they look far more nervy than when they go away from home. You can almost feel the tension within the crowd when you're watching, and you can see that very evident in some of the play that they've shown too. So it's very hard to sit here and say you would expect Manchester United to go through. They're not in brilliant form. They haven't picked up a huge amount of results in the Premier League. They're not a side who are used to winning a huge number of games. But if their season is to come to anything, it has to be within this competition. If they go out tonight, it's going to be a long couple of weeks to the end of the season where there's absolutely nothing to play for in the Premier League. They'll be out of all cup competitions. It would be a sorry end to what has been a very, very poor Premier League campaign and campaign in general. But if they win tonight, it gives them hope. It gives them hope within the Europa League that they could go on, they could lift a trophy, they could qualify for the Champions League. And the summer then has a completely different narrative than it does if you go out tonight to a relatively average Lyon team.
Okay, and speaking about average and disappointing campaigns, Spurs are away to Eintracht Frankfurt, 1-1 from the first leg, but in Germany that's a tough second leg.
It certainly is, and you know, talking about Manchester United at home, talking about Tottenham away from home, they have the fourth worst away record in the Premier League. Only Ipswich, Leicester and Southampton have a poor form on the road than Tottenham. So another team that it's very hard to hang your hat on. And Ange Postecoglou came out with the famous line of, "I always win something in my second season." I would not be surprised if they went out to this Frankfurt team. Frankfurt are a decent side in Bundesliga this year. They've obviously lost Marmoush, who went to Man City, but they've continued to be competitive. They're third in the league. They're very good at home. They've shown last week that they were well able to put it up to Tottenham. And another side, when you look at Tottenham, that it's very hard to say with any sort of confidence that you expect them to go through. I would expect Frankfurt to be the team that will be challenging tonight and the team that I would expect to progress here, because under Postecoglou over the last couple of months, like, the wheels have completely come off at Tottenham.
Okay, we're going to try and squeeze in some team news before the end of the programme. Paul, please stay with us after the break. We are going to talk Eye on America.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now, for the first time in over 10 years on Irish radio, I'm delighted to say I'm introducing a man who's got his beady little eye on American sports. Jeff Shepherd, welcome and happy holy Thursday to you.
Oh, my goodness. Time travel is possible, Andrew.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And you got breaking news. Aaron Rodgers dishing the dirt.
Yeah, so listen, he just went on the Pat McAfee show, which is a show on ESPN here in the States. And they were asking him, you know, just he's going to start talking. He wants to come on and set the record straight. And he doesn't really say anything for the first 4 or 5 minutes. And then he just drops this bomb about how he got released by the Jets. He had flown cross country and was sitting in a room with the general manager and their new head coach, Aaron Glenn. And Aaron Glenn turns to him and says, "You still planning on playing football?" And Aaron Rodgers said, "Yes." And Aaron Glenn said, "Okay, well, we're moving in a different direction." And that was basically it. He said he was in the facility for about 45 minutes or an hour or so after flying cross country. And that was basically the end of his Jets career. And so he said he's been talking to some teams. He mentioned the Vikings. He said he has not really, you know, courted the Vikings at all. He went to Pittsburgh and met with Mike Tomlin and some folks at the Steelers, but he didn't really mention anybody else. He did say he has been focused on some situations with some of his close friends and family outside of football that's really kind of been taking up the majority of his time this offseason. And he said he is open to anything and committed to nothing, and retirement is still on the table.
So he's just put him through the shop window.
That's exactly right. I think he is open to all offers from any team that are interested in his services. But at the end of the day, you know, depending on what happens with the draft, and you know, he may just decide this is it and ride off into the sunset. So we'll see.
Okay, let's watch that space as and I'd say there's another trick or two left in him. But let's go back to the golf, the U.S. Masters, Shep. Last Sunday, yeah. It was sort of the Bryson DeChambeau MAGA cap wearing against the lovely boy from Hollywood and County Down, Rory McIlroy. And it was funny because you'd expect the American crowd to fully back the American, but no, it was sort of 50-50, maybe 60-40 for Rory. Shows how popular Rory is in America.
Oh, absolutely, Andrew. And look, I mean, I think people, you know, people root for golfers. No one ever wants, you know, bad things to happen to golfers on golf courses, because I think part of it is because you can sort of almost see yourself out there. Now, no one's as good as these guys are, but, you know, it's not like, you know, you're trying to hit a baseball at 105 miles an hour or, you know, go across the middle on an NFL route because you'll get killed. You know, I mean, you just have to be a certain, you know, person or species that can do that. But, you know, I mean, anybody can play golf. You know, yeah, he was hands down, you know, the favorite last week, and he got off to such the rough start. He said the nerves, you know, were such a big factor in it. But, you know, when he got back into the lead, I mean, he definitely had the crowd on his side. And, you know, I think everyone was pulling for him, you know, to get it done in regulation before you got into the playoff. But, I mean, there's no doubt that's exactly who they were rooting for. I mean, to cap the career Grand Slam there at Augusta. And now, I mean, look, Andrew, he's set himself up. He can have an all-time career year this year. You know, they're going to play the PGA at Quail Hollow in North Carolina. He's won there four times already and owns the course record. So, you know, he could really be setting himself up for something special this year.
Okay, Shep, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us, and I will speak to you very soon, my friend. We are going to flick over to Camogie. Very busy weekend just gone, and a very busy weekend ahead. Aoife Murray, Cork legend, joins us on the line. Aoife, how are you? And happy Holy Thursday to you.
Likewise. It's been a good few weeks for Cork, so I'm in good mood.
Yes, very good. Let's briefly touch on that 21-10 victory at the weekend. And I mean, there was no arguing with the result given that performance.
No, there wasn't. It was, I have to say, probably one of the best displays I think that I've seen Cork put in over the years, like consistent from start to finish, and really showed the strength and depth in the panel as well, with the likes of Hayes and Mackey, but I suppose not being able to start, but then you're bringing on Amy O'Connor, the likes of Murphy on. I think it really showed Cork's depth, as I said. But equally, if I could just pick out two moments in that match that to me just summed up literally the hunger and the work rate of that Cork team. One was at 37 minutes, McCartan up in the forward line, defending like they were one point down. No Hurley throwing her hands up in the air, trying to block that ball and keeping it up there. As a back, he must have been so energised from seeing your teammate up in the forwards work so hard to defend. And then the second piece, at 50 minutes, Aoife Healy down at the other end. It was 15-7. So they were fairly comfortable and they were winning probably nearly every position in the field. Again, hunting Wilder Hurley, throwing herself in, trying to defend the ball as much as possible. And to me, those two particular moments from a defence and an offensive side, to me just showed, I suppose, why they were such worthy winners last Sunday.
And next weekend, or this weekend, coming, of course, the Munster Championship semi-final, Cork and Clare. I suppose they just continue on, probably no celebrations from the league, just show up to training and go again against Clare this weekend.
Actually, I hope they had some celebrations. I think we can focus too much of trying to, I suppose, overly straight, stay on the straight and narrow. I hope they went and they had a great night on Sunday night. I think they fully deserved it. They had a Super League. And listen, Cork hadn't won the National League in a number of years. I can't remember, geez, was it 2013 or 14 since they last won it. You know, the two or three girls had National League medals on that panel. So I really hope that they did go and have a really good night. But in fairness, it'll be straight back down to training again later this week. But I think they'll be facing in, Clare will be looking at this going, can we catch them on the hop? Can we catch them maybe with their bit of leggy, especially with the three new players who played both Saturday and Sunday, who were, in fairness, outstanding on Sunday. I don't know how they managed to have the engine for it, but they were absolutely outstanding. So I think, in fairness, Cork will certainly go in on Sunday, double header, making sure they want to keep that run going.
And the Munster quarter final in Semple Stadium, tip up against Limerick. And would you favour Tipperary here?
I would look. I think maybe they probably petered out a little bit in the league. Tip did, but to me, I think panel wise and just where they are in their development, I think they're quite ahead of Limerick. I suppose what you would be hoping for here is that it would be a fairly contested game, and for Limerick that they would have some grassroots coming out of that. But to me, Tip will be probably just too strong for them on the day.
And Aoife, before I let you go, a word on Offaly's victory over Derry, because they're one of the most impressive teams in the league so far this year. Have Offaly impressed you?
Absolutely. I have to say, like, the Cork Galway game was really enjoyable, obviously from a Cork point of view to watch. But as a neutral, I thought that was a super game, in particularly watching just how natural Offaly just played Camogie that last Sunday, watching just how they held the hurley. I know I'm getting a bit technical with regard to just always holding it halfway short, picking that ball up with grass tickling their hands, being able to score those goals, where in fairness Derry fairly packed. They tried to pack it because they've been a bit leaky in defence over the years. They tried to compact that square, but just how natural. And I know most of the headlines have gone to the Tihins, but rightly so. I thought they were absolutely fantastic, and very much a bit like Cork, very much worthy winners.
Aoife, thank you very much for that. We shall speak to you next week, and have a great weekend. Enjoy the first weekend of the Championship. Paul Curry has team news ahead of Manchester United at home to Lyon.
Yeah, I'll just rattle through the Man U team here. Andrew Onana in goal, Dalot, Mazraoui, Maguire, Yoro, Dorgu, midfield three of Casemiro, Ugarte, Fernandez and Garnacho and Hoyland.
Interesting. Score prediction?
I'll go 2-1 Lyon.
Oh, 2-1 Lyon. Okay, you heard it here first. Happy Holy Thursday to you all. Bene da Silva is coming up after the news, but first we have a break.